Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're digging into something really substantial, Robert Caro's huge series, The Years of Lyndon Johnson. You know, The Path to Power, Master of the Senate. Massive books.
Yeah, monumental. And they're not just biographies, are they? They're more like these deep dives into American history itself.
Exactly. And our mission here isn't just, well, telling LDJ's life story. Caro uses Johnson as this incredible lens, really, to look at political power. Not just, you know, does power corrupt, but how it reveals who someone truly is.
Right. It strips everything away. Ambitions, character. It's all laid bare.
It's pretty breathtaking stuff.
And LBJ, well, he's the perfect subject for that, isn't he? The 36th president, 1908 to 73. Just this figure of immense ambition, legislative genius, definitely. But also, yeah, full of contradictions.
Deep moral contradictions.
His whole story is kind of woven into 20th century America from like absolute poverty to the very top. And that journey really makes you think, doesn't it? About ambition, leadership, the paradoxes involved.
Absolutely. And why should you, our listener, care about this? Well, Caro's work is like this amazing shortcut, a shortcut to understanding how power actually works, how people get it, how they use it.
And that tension, the good intentions versus the sometimes ruthless methods.
Yeah, that uncomfortable dance.
Yeah.
It really forces you to question what kind of leadership we accept or even value. Okay, so let's start where Caro starts, back in the Texas Hill Country. Johnson's childhood. Caro just immerses you in this place. It sounds incredibly harsh. Poverty wasn't abstract. It was visceral.
Oh, absolutely. He describes the women aging so fast from the hard labor, the men's hands all gnarled. You really feel the struggle.
And Caro says this environment wasn't just a setting. It was a trauma.
A formative trauma, yeah. Johnson saw his own family almost starve. That feeling, that humiliation. Caro argues it lit this fire under him, this insatiable need for power, for wealth, but mostly as a defense mechanism.
A shield. So he'd never feel that vulnerable again.
Exactly. That fear drove him.
And his parents played a big role too, right?
Huge roles. His father, Sam Ely Johnson Jr., had been in politics but failed. Kind of a cautionary tale for Lyndon.
And his mother.
Rebecca Baines Johnson. Educated, refined, but stuck in this life she felt was beneath her. She gave him that love of learning, but also this intense hunger to escape.
Wow, quite the mix of influences.
And you see that hunger play out even in college, Southwest Texas State Teachers College. Caro shows it wasn't really about the books for LBJ. It was like a lab for learning manipulation, learning dominance.
He didn't just join student government.
No, he basically took it over. Reshaped it to serve his ambitions, all while looking like he was serving the students, already mastering the system.
But then there's that teaching job in Cotola. That seems really key in Caro's telling.
It really is. He taught these Mexican-American kids who were in poverty that just dwarfed anything he'd experienced. Caro suggests this is where the seeds of compassion for his great society were planted.
But it wasn't purely altruistic, was it? There was still that need to...
To dominate, exactly, even there. Caro shows him needing to remake the students, impose his will. It was this weird mix of caring and control.
So what Caro's getting at, really, is how our deepest drives, like Johnson's ambition, often come from these vulnerable places.
Right, and that sometimes our best intentions can have these really complicated, maybe even self-serving roots. It makes you think about motivation.
So that drive pushes him to Washington. He gets a job as Secretary to Congressman Kleberg.
And Caro presents this as way more than just a job. It's Johnson's real education, his lifelong study of power.
Like he was dissecting the whole system, rules, traditions, the unspoken stuff.
Exactly, figuring out how it all really worked.
And it paid off fast.
Yeah.
He becomes Texas State Director for the National Youth Administration. He was only 27.
Yeah, incredibly young. And he didn't just see it as, you know, pushing papers. For Johnson, it was a chance to build his network. Mm-hmm. Every job, every favor. It was all weaving this web.
A web of obligation and loyalty, setting himself up for the future.
Precisely. A masterclass in building a power base from the ground up.
Okay, but then, the 1948 Senate race. Landslide Lyndon. This is where it gets controversial.
Deeply controversial. Caro's research here is just relentless. He lays out this case for systematic fraud.
The famous Box 13 in Alice, Texas.
That's the one. After the polls close, suddenly 202 more votes for Johnson appear.
Oh.
All in alphabetical order, supposedly. Gave him the win by just 87 votes. It's a pretty damning stuff as Caro presents it.
And Caro argues this election changed Johnson fundamentally.
Yeah, he argues it proved to Johnson that rules, ethics, They were just obstacles, things to get around. It cemented that ruthlessness, but also that incredible resilience he would just not lose.
So the man who came out of that was harder, more willing to bend the rules.
Definitely harder. More cynical, maybe. Willing to do what it took. Now, other historians might debate how much the single event shaped him, but Caro makes a powerful case for its impact.
So he wins, gets to the Senate. How does that ruthlessness translate into becoming such a force there? He mastered the Senate, as Caro puts it.
He really did. Becoming majority leader in 55, youngest ever at 46. That wasn't just a title change. He revolutionized the job. Turned it from something kind of ceremonial into the absolute power center of the Senate.
Oh, what was the secret?
The secret, according to Caro, was the Johnson treatment.
Ah, yes, the treatment. What exactly was that?
It was, well, obsessive. He studied every single senator, knew their needs, their weaknesses, their ambitions, kept files in his head.
Okay.
And then he'd use it all in that very personal, very intense interaction. Physically imposing, getting right in their space, a mix of flattery, threats, logic, bargaining, whatever worked for that specific person.
Wow. So he wasn't just counting votes.
No, he was creating them. Manufacturing consent, you could almost say.
Quite a lesson in influence, isn't it? Understanding motivation, mastering the system for good or ill.
Absolutely. It shows you the sheer effectiveness that kind of focused approach can have, regardless of the ultimate goal.
Let's talk about one of those goals.
Yeah.
The 1957 Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
This feels like a prime example of that Johnson contradiction.
It really is. Here he is, a Southerner, but with his eye on the presidency. He knows he needs to lead on civil rights.
But Caro shows it wasn't just pure moral conviction.
Well, it was also calculation. He made sure the bill was weak enough that the Southern senators wouldn't filibuster it to death.
So a compromise.
A strategic compromise, yeah. Turning a moral issue into a political win, paving the way for stronger stuff later. Classic Johnson, as Caro sees it.
Okay. Then fast forward to 1963. Kennedy's assassination. A moment of absolute national crisis.
And Caro details how Johnson just takes command. It's incredible. Within hours, he's stabilizing the government, planning his agenda.
Reassuring the nation.
And pushing through Kennedy's stalled bills, especially the big one, the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Caro calls it a moment of sheer genius and patriotism.
It really shows his mastery in a crisis, his ability to seize the moment.
But then, the shadow. Vietnam. And the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution in 64.
Yeah, this is where Caro argues that power started to, well, corrupt, or maybe reveal something darker. Johnson uses these very questionable reports of attacks on U.S. ships.
To get what Caro calls a blank check from Congress.
Exactly. Carte blanche for military action in Vietnam. A pivotal, and for Caro, deeply troubling moment.
And the irony Caro points out is,
it's that the very same confidence, that same belief that he could bend any situation, any person to his will. The thing that made him so effective in the Senate.
That became disastrous in foreign policy.
Totally catastrophic. He thought power alone could solve Vietnam. He underestimated the complexities, the limits of his personal style, and that led to the escalation, the credibility gap, the whole tragedy.
A leader's greatest strength becoming their fatal flaw.
Precisely. And Johnson knew it in the end. Caro describes his later years haunted by the knowledge that Vietnam would overshadow his civil rights legacy.
His decision not to run again in 68.
Caro sees it as partly acknowledging failure, but also a final act of that cold political realism he had.
It all comes back to Caro's big idea, doesn't it? Power reveals.
It really does. Johnson wasn't necessarily corrupted by power. Power let him be fully Johnson, the good and the bad, the champion of the poor, the ruthless manipulator, the legislative genius, bully. It was all him.
So pulling back, what are the big enduring insights we get from Caro's work on Johnson?
Well, one huge thing is just the sheer impact one individual can have. Caro pushes back hard against the idea that history is just impersonal forces. He shows how Johnson's will, his skill, his understanding of power literally bent history.
It really emphasizes agency.
Definitely. And it forces you to confront the moral ambiguity of politics.
That tension between the good goals, like civil rights or fighting poverty, and the methods used.
Exactly. The 48 election fraud, the Johnson treatment. Caro lays out the evidence exhaustively, but he doesn't really tell you what to think. He leaves the judgment to you, the reader.
Which is powerful. What about key relationships? They seem crucial in Caro's narrative.
Oh, absolutely. Sam Rayburn, Speaker of the House, his mentor in Congress, teaching him the ropes.
And Lady Bird Johnson.
Crucial. Caro paints her as incredibly shrewd, intelligent, resilient, not just a supportive wife, but a real partner, his anchor financially and emotionally.
but also subject to his...
His domineering side, yes. Even that relationship shows the complexities, the blend of manipulation and genuine connection.
And then there's JFK.
The rival. And then the president he served under as VP, feeling totally sidelined. That relationship really highlights the limits of Johnson's style on the national, maybe even international stage, compared to Kennedy's charisma. It showed where his power didn't quite translate.
And Caro doesn't shy away from the human cost of it all, does he? The ambition.
Not at all. He shows Johnson's deep isolation at times, the depression, the strained relationships. It's a real cautionary tale about the price of that kind of relentless drive.
And maybe raises questions for us today about truth in politics.
Yeah.
His willingness to manipulate it.
Yeah. Caro shows how that relationship with truth, or lack thereof, left a mark. It's something we're definitely still dealing with in our political discourse.
Well, this deep dive into LBJ through Caro's lens.
Yeah.
It really gives you so much to chew on. It's like a masterclass in leadership, influence, history.
Absolutely. And the value for you, the listener, is this incredibly detailed look at how American democracy actually works. Its potential for amazing progress.
But also its vulnerability.
Its vulnerability to intense personal ambition. It shows you, very starkly, that massive flaws and incredible achievements can exist in the same person. Understanding that seems pretty essential.
It really does. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive today. It's been fascinating to explore this with you. And here's something to think about. If Robert Caro is right, if power truly reveals a leader's nature, what does our choice of leaders, and maybe the methods we tolerate for them to gain power, reveal about us, about our own society's values? Something to consider until next time.